KU would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Larahio Bistro, located at 2823 Southwest 1st Avenue, a family-owned eatery serving home-cooked food just outside downtown Portland. Lunch was provided by Fatou's Kitchen, a restaurant located on 3601 Northeast MLK, serving Afro-Caribbean, Afro-Latin, African food, and also soul food. Dinner was provided by Namaste Indian Cuisine, whose locally owned and operated restaurants, including the location at 1403 Northeast Widler Street, offers a buffet menu with vegetarian and gluten-free options from 11 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. every day. Becoming a member is easy when you call 877-500-5266 today to support KBOO.
On Thursday, September 29th, from 8 to 10 p.m., Grassroot News will celebrate Fall 2016 with P-Funk as we get up for the downstroke with a deconstruction and celebration of George Clinton and the P-Funk All-Stars. Dr. Funkenstein and his contribution to music will be examined, as well as politics on the national and local level. So join me Thursday, September 29th from 8 to 10 p.m. for the Mothership Connection on KBOO Portland.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Good morning, good morning. You are listening to KBOO, your community radio station. I'm Ani, and this is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. Lynn is out of town today, so you just get half of the dynamic duo. But this is going to be an action-packed show because this morning we are joined by David K. Johnston. David K. Johnston is a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist and author, an expert on taxes, accounting, economics, public finance, and business. He's a distinguished visiting lecturer. He teaches tax, property, and regulatory law, and author of several books, including his most recent, The Making of Donald Trump, as well as he's written Divided, The Perils of Our Growing Inequality, and other titles like The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English to Rob You Blind, and Free Lunch, How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at Government Expense and Stick You with the Bill. And we've talked with David a few times in the past, and I always enjoy our conversations. Good morning, David K. Johnston. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Well, thank you for having me on. And by the way, the place where I teach is the Law School and the Graduate Business School at Syracuse University.
Yes. I truncated my own sentence there, trying to get everything out. Thank you very much for adding that. And thanks again for being with us. I just want to, we have so much to talk about this morning. I want to sort of jump straight into it. You have been following the career and exploits of Donald Trump for more than 20 years. And the first question that pops in my head is why? What caught your attention in the first place? Why have you focused so much attention on Trump?
Well, in 1988, I left the L.A. Times, where my exposés of the LAPD's spying squad and brutality and a lot of other investigations had made me sort of toxic to the newspaper, and a new editor was not interested in having my work. And I went to Atlantic City to write about the casino industry because I believed that we were about to see casino gambling spread all across America, which in fact we have. And the most important economic force in Atlantic City in 1988 when I went there was Donald Trump. So I met him within a couple of days of arriving, immediately sized him up as a salesman of the likes of P.T. Barnum. You know, hey, buy your ticket and come to see the amazing Fiji Mermaid and the Two-Headed Man.
Right.
And right after that, his competitors, including Steve Wynn, executives at other casinos, and some of his own people started telling me, Trump doesn't know anything about the casino business. He doesn't understand the games, the odds, customer management, hotel operations. The only thing he knows how to do is take money out of the business as fast as he possibly can. And I just didn't believe that. I mean, that just didn't make sense. The man has two casinos. How can he have two casinos and not know anything about the business? So the first time that we sat down to have a cup of coffee, I had a cup of coffee, he didn't, I deliberately said something to him false about the game of craps. And he took my false statement and incorporated it into his response. Now, that's what the psychics you hear advertised on daytime TV do. That's what con artists do. And I had three backup questions that also had false statements. And in each case, he embraced the falsehood because he didn't know anything, and continued. And he's done this in the campaign. And in my book, The Making of Donald Trump, I cite a good example of this kind of conversation when he was interviewed by Lester Holt after he said that Hillary Clinton slept through Benghazi. And Holt pointed out that it was 3 o'clock in the afternoon in Washington, D.C., where Hillary Clinton was. And Trump tried to incorporate that into his answer, and then he tried to buffalo his way out of it. He is at heart a con artist, and he has spent his entire life swindling workers, small businesses that are suppliers to him, and investors in projects out of their money, which is what con artists do.
And you know, this reminds me of an answer that he's given recently in terms of foreign policy, and his response was he would use other people's money, and that's just smart business. Other people's money, you spend that.
And in Atlantic City, although he eventually owned 3.5 casinos, technically 4, but the rule said 3, so they connected 2 of them with a walkway, he never had $1 invested. In his very first deal, he got fees up front. In his second deal, he borrowed 100% and took a $5 million fee off the top. He did the same thing in his third deal, the Taj Mahal, which is about to close forever. And the consistent pattern of Donald Trump business deals is he gets paid up front. If the business gets into trouble, he demands more money out of it. And if vendors don't get paid or workers don't get paid, well, too bad for them. And he achieves this through threatening litigation. He uses threats of litigation all the time. He also has gotten government to take his side against his bankers. He was the original, at least in the last 25 years, too big to fail business. He got the state of New Jersey's Casino Control Commission to take his side against his bankers. When he had told me he was worth $3 billion, he told a television reporter the same day he was worth $5 billion, which tells you he just makes up these numbers. But he couldn't pay his bills as they came due. And the New Jersey Casino Control Commission basically told the 70 banks from which he had borrowed over $3.2 billion, 900 of it on his signature, basically a credit card. That's what a credit card is, right? It's only backed by your signature. The state of New Jersey told the bankers, if you want to foreclose on Mr. Trump, go right ahead, and you will have lovely hotels by the seaside, but you won't have casino licenses, even though it was within their power to keep the casinos going. And that decision tilted things for Donald Trump, and as a result, he did not get swept into the dustbin of economic history because of a government bailout.
And, you know, you mentioned that he has threatened to sue so many people over the years, any that are critical of him or who, you know, might try to, you know, say something about his practices. And you yourself were threatened with a suit over a piece that you wrote about him earlier this year. Can you talk about that?
Sure. Donald is a party to more than 4,500 lawsuits. That's an astonishing number. Many people go through a whole career in business as owners and never get sued, or they get sued once or twice. Trump has threatened many times to sue me, but most recently he called me at home on April 27th and told me that if he didn't like the way I wrote a piece I was doing about his long-standing connections to criminals, that he'd sue me. And I pointed out to him, let me go inside, the next-door neighbor is gardening, and I pointed out to him that he is a public figure. That means the only way he could collect damages from me would be if I deliberately, knowingly told a lie. That is, I knew something was false, and I wrote it anyway, which there's zero chance of. And Trump said, I know I'm a public figure, I'll sue you anyway. Now, a few years ago, he sued a former New York Times colleague of mine, Tim O'Brien, for writing in a book called Trump Nation that Trump was not a billionaire, and he was probably worth, based on partly documents that Trump gave him, less than $200 million. That still makes him a very wealthy man, just not a billionaire. And when he lost the case, Trump said, I knew I couldn't win. I did it just to harass him. And I've had two newspapers not run interviews with me because the newspaper's lawyers were afraid Trump would sue, and they were so small it would destroy the business.
Wow. By
the way, I've been doing this for almost 50 years, Ani.
Yeah.
From the Santa Cruz, California City Council to the White House, the only politician who has ever said, write it my way or I'll sue you, is Donald Trump. Nobody does this in politics. It is completely outside the realm of politics, just as, you know, these recent things where we see people saying, jail Hillary, and he suggested assassinating. Clearly, he's twice suggested assassinating her. This is completely outside the realm of what a free democratic people do. And yet millions of people cheer this man on, evidently because they don't like America as it is. They want to have a dictatorship.
I was going to ask you what you made of the couple of very thinly veiled threats around the Second Amendment and Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, just beyond the pale that you would have this. Now, this has been a recurring theme on the right. You'll recall that we had a member of Congress some years ago who said that Bill Clinton better not step foot in his state because somebody will shoot him.
Right.
If you look carefully at Hillary Clinton's clothing, it's pretty clear in many public appearances that she's wearing a Kevlar vest. And I do not understand responsible Republicans not stepping forward to denounce this. I mean, Paul Ryan gave sort of a, this isn't appropriate comment. This is something that is completely unacceptable. And by not acting very strongly, I think the Republican Party is doing very long-term damage to it. And we don't want to live in a one-party country. We want to remember what Aristotle taught. Democracy means to rule and to be ruled in turns. The Democrats get their turn, the Republicans get their turn, the Democrats get it again, then the Republicans get it. Not one-party rule.
And we're going to get right back with more of that in just a moment. David K. Johnston, we are pleased to be talking with you this morning on Positively Revolting. And right now we're going to bring Teresa into the conversation to let us know how our membership drive is doing.
Membership drive is doing swimmingly this morning, I'm glad to say. And we are pleased to offer you The Making of Donald Trump by David K. Johnston. Now a bestseller, this book is the culmination of nearly 30 years of reporting on Donald Trump by Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter David K. Johnston. And it takes a revealingly close look at the mogul's rise to power and prominence. Of course, Trump is very much in the headlines, disgustingly much in the headlines, I would say. And if you want to know what's going on and have the details, well, you can get this book by calling us up at 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KABU. And you can get this book for a $75 minimum pledge, $75. And if you prefer, you can set that up so that you take $6.25 out of your bank account painlessly, monthly. We love to do that. It's what we call a sustaining pledge, and then you can have your own copy of the book. 877-500-5266 is the number to call. KBOO.FM. If you're listening there, you'll find the donation button on the upper right. This is the Friday before the Saturday, before we wrap it up. We're coming to the end of our membership drive, and so if you've been holding back, I congratulate you for your judiciousness. You shouldn't just throw your money away after all, but you've been listening because you care about what the truth is, and you want to know the details, and you want to know an uncensored truth. You can get that at KABU, can't you? And it's because of small contributors like you that we have been able to do this for, lo, these four and more decades. We depend on those small contributions. They keep KABU KABU. It's a very powerful dynamic. We want to do it this way. We want to be small. We want to be truthful. We want to get those small donations. That means you, and that means right now. 877-500-5266, 877-500-KABU, 877-500-5266. We've gotten the bagels and the cakes out and the coffee, and we're doing our membership drive thing here and quite enjoying it. But we're waiting for your call to really kick it forward. 877-500-5266 is the number to call. 877-500-KABU. That's me.
It is you. What are we looking to raise this morning on Positively Revolting?
The goal is $900.
$900. We can do that, friends, but it is collective action that gets the goods, right? 877-500-5266. Do call right now with your pledge of support to KABU, your community radio station. Do pick up a copy of The Making of Donald Trump. You know, David K. Johnston has a long history, as he said, 50 years of investigative reporting and almost 30 years of looking at Donald Trump in that time. This is a book that's very insightful and does get behind the sort of myth into really who Trump is. And I think it's well worth your time right now to stop for just a moment and give your support to community radio so we can remain fiercely independent. 877-500-5266 is the number to call this morning, and you can support KABU. Thanks very much. And David K. Johnston, I want to return to our conversation. This whole phenomenon has just sort of blown my mind over the last year. When he started his bid for the White House, many saw Trump as some sort of joke, maybe even a bad joke. You know, I remember people saying, well, you know, comedians haven't had this kind of fodder since Dan Quayle. And yet, here we are a year later, and he's one of the two primary finalists for this race. Did you think that he would actually get there?
Oh, yeah. In fact, the opening of my book is that when he made the announcement at Trump Tower in Midtown Manhattan, I realized right then that he was serious this time. Remember, Trump's been talking about running for president since 1985.
Yeah.
He asked George H.W. Bush to make him, rather than Dan Quayle, his running mate in 88. He ran for the Reform Party in 2000 and vowed he'd be the first candidate to turn a profit running for the presidency. And the reason he was widely ridiculed was because in 2012, when he said he was running, it was treated seriously by every national journalist except two, Lawrence O'Donnell of MSNBC and me. And we independently came to the same obvious conclusion as soon as he announced that he was really running for a new contract for his TV show with NBC. And indeed, when he got out of the campaign, he said, you know, much as the country would benefit from my being president, my show needs me more. And so anybody serious about politics thought this was a joke. This time around, I knew that Trump was in serious danger of having his show canceled for low ratings. And to Donald Trump, short of death, nothing would be more devastating than for the New York Post and the New York Daily News, the two tabloids, to have on their cover, NBC to Trump, you're fired.
Right.
And I tried right then to do a book. My literary agent called around and to my normal publisher and everybody else. Nobody thought that he would be in the campaign for long. And by the time it became clear he was likely to be the candidate for most publishers, there was no time left. But during the year, I wrote about 25 columns for various places, USA Today, Newsweek, National Memo, about what Trump was up to. And a lot of those were aimed at journalists and trying to get journalists to ask the questions that nobody is asking about the complete contradiction between who he is in the public record and this public image, and particularly about his very long, deep embrace of American mafia, Russian mobsters, con artists, swindlers, and most especially of all, a major cocaine trafficker whom he risked his very lucrative casino license for to get mercy for him. The guy ended up serving 18 months, while the mules who moved the drugs for him got 20 years.
Yeah, that's an incredible story, and yeah. I remember speaking with you about it the last time you were on the air here. Can you elaborate on that just a little bit?
Sure. Donald Trump, like all casino owners, needed helicopters to fly high rollers from New York and Philadelphia and Baltimore and Washington into Atlantic City. Instead of going to one of the well-established, well-financed companies, he went to a very lightly financed outfit that was run by a mob associate and convicted embezzler named Joe Wechselbaum. Joe Wechselbaum also managed his personal helicopter, which back then was called the Ivana after his first wife. Well, Wechselbaum had a second business. He was trafficking in Colombian marijuana and cocaine that was moved from Florida up to Cincinnati, Ohio. And the federal indictments shows that he personally handled the drugs, which is kind of unusual for a trafficker. He agreed to plead guilty in Cincinnati, but he asked that for sentencing the matter be moved either to Miami or to where he lived in New York City. Instead, mysteriously, because no one has ever been able to explain this, the case was moved to New Jersey, and it came before federal judge Marianne Trump Berry, Donald's older sister.
Right.
Now, she recused herself from this case, but just imagine, Ani, you're the chief judge, and I come down the hall to you as another judge and say, you know, I have to get rid of this case with this major drug trafficker because my spouse is a lawyer for Trump's casinos who flies in these helicopters back and forth all the time to Atlantic City, and I fly in this drug trafficker's helicopters all the time, too. You think that might set off a few alarm bells in your head?
It could. I would, yes.
Yeah, you'd be a little worried about the integrity of the judicial system. Well, Trump didn't cut ties to this guy, even though his casino license required that he not be involved with mobsters and other criminals. In fact, he wrote a letter pleading for mercy for Joe Wechselbaum, saying he was a diligent guy and a stand-up guy, you know, who shouldn't go to prison for long. So while the mules got up to 20 years, he served 18 months. While he was trying to get out, he told his probation officer, his parole officer, that he met the requirement to have a job when he left because he was going to go to work for Donald Trump. And he said he couldn't pay his fines because he had no money, and yet he moved into a multimillion-dollar apartment in Trump Tower. Now, the question that journalists should be asking is, Mr. Trump, what was the reason that you risked your incredibly valuable casino license for this drug trafficker? And why did you describe him the way he was? Why was it critical to you that you made this man know you were his friend and not his enemy? What did he know about you that would have put you in jeopardy, perhaps your casino license in jeopardy, if he felt you had in any way turned on him? Nobody's asking that question except me.
I think it's a dang good question. I want to bring a listener into the conversation. Mitch is online right now. Good morning, Mitch. You're on the air.
Good morning. And every time I hear David K. Johnson, it's refreshing because he's right. There are things that haven't been covered about Donald Trump. And the only problem I have with it is that the reason Trump exists is because the alternative is someone who has had even less investigation of her business dealings, namely having Hillary Clinton run against Donald Trump is what made such a transparent thug as Trump palatable. Because
Mitch,
who else can the people turn to?
Yeah, Mitch, can I ask you a question about that?
Sure.
What makes you think Hillary Clinton hasn't been examined? There are about 30 books about her. There have been congressional inquiries. We have her tax returns for the last 39 years, or maybe it's 38 years. There have been lots of inquiries into her, all of which have turned up nothing. The Clinton Foundation, for example, I know there's work out there by a man named Charles Ortel claiming all sorts of things, but when I read his work, I discovered he doesn't know anything about nonprofit law and tax law, and so he makes all sorts of just fundamental mistakes at the get-go. There are 11 million people breathing right now at this moment who would be dead but for the Clinton Foundation activities. The Clinton Foundation was the subject of a forensic audit ordered by the Clintons. That is, instead of sampling, which is what you do in a normal audit, every single transaction was examined. You can see the audits online. The tax returns are online. Trump has no audits online. So I've looked into stuff about the Clintons, and I see lots of accusations, but when you try to run them out, there doesn't appear to be anything there in any of them I've been able to find. And I've posted and asked people, send me examples. And when I run them out, there's lots of accusations, but nothing proven about her at all.
Well, I can answer that.
Okay.
If it isn't rhetorical.
Not rhetorical.
Okay.
Go right ahead.
The very first thing I would point to is see how much coverage there is about Eagle Vale Partners and the $1 billion in losses of the hedge fund that her son-in-law runs, and see where the biggest, and I know you know this, that's the thing that I find, you know, so confusing, because, you know, you're hip to this, it's that the general public doesn't know that the failure to bail out Greece absolutely mirrors, when her husband was president, what the Secretary of Treasury Robert Rubin did in bailing out the Mexican peso.
Okay,
and
Mitch,
her son-in-law is running a hedge fund. She's running for president, and all of a sudden, because Bernie Sanders is getting popular, she starts coming out with critical remarks about hedge funds. And not one reporter asks her about her son-in-law running Eagle Vale Partners.
Okay, Mitch, thanks very much for your question.
Oh, now you're going to cut me off. Great. I didn't even get to the deal that Oracle got from our Democratic governor
Buffalo.
Mitch, we are going to let you go, but
yeah,
David
but
K. Johnson,
Ani,
do you want to respond to that?
Sure. What Mitch is talking about is something done by another person. It's not Hillary Clinton. I mean, am I responsible for everything that my 8 grown children do? I don't think so. Are my parents, when they were alive, responsible for what I do? No. And you know, where is Hillary Clinton doing this? I mean, her financial life is totally transparent. My column in Today at Investopedia, it's also at the Daily Beast, is about the known record on the charitable giving of Trump versus the Clintons. The giving rate of the Clintons, based on their wealth, which we know what it is from the public record, unlike Donald Trump, is literally 1,000 times the giving rate of Donald Trump based on the public record. And if you assume Donald Trump is telling the truth that he's given away $102 million, which there's no record to support this, then the Clintons' giving rate is 37 times his rate based on their wealth. And I just, when people like Mitch present examples like these, I've run them down. I haven't run down this particular one about Eagle, but that's her son-in-law. That's not her. And that's not a valid comparison. And if that's the standard you do want to have of relatives, go read my column about the bank fraud committed by Bernie Sanders' wife and the indications that there's tax fraud by the Sanders, would be by Mrs. Sanders, because I don't think Bernie pays any attention to this stuff. It's his wife. But his wife very clearly committed bank fraud and could have been prosecuted for it. Do we hold Sanders responsible for his wife's bank fraud? I don't think so.
And I think at this moment, we're going to go ahead and let people know you are listening to KABU, your community radio station. This is Ani. I'm here with David K. Johnston this morning. We are talking about his new biography of Trump, The Making of Donald Trump. And we are asking for your support at KABU right now, 877-500-5266. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning. Rashonda has called in from Milwaukee. And is a new member, and she called 877-500-5266. Greg has called in from Troutdale. He has set up an EFT, and it says, dedicated listener to David K. Johnston. You know, this is a titan among journalists. Ani has explained just exactly how true that is, and we have his book available to you, which you can get for a $75 minimum pledge by calling right now, 877-500-5266. Here on this last Friday, before the last Saturday of our membership drive, you can call in right now, 877-500-5266, 877-500-KABU. Now, I'm pleased to offer also, for a $15 a month pledge, that's a $180 sustaining pledge, only available until 11 a.m. today on our special News and Public Affairs Day, KABU's Fight the Fascists Power Pack. And this includes The Making of Donald Trump by David K. Johnston. You can get that book, but you get three other books. You get Limousine Liberal, How an Incendiary Image United the Right and Fractured America by Steve Fraser. You get Lies Incorporated by Ari Ravenhoft. You can get Necessary Trouble, Americans in Revolt by Sarah Jaffe. All of those books. You get all four books by calling us right now and pledging $15 a month. Now, this is a case where you're getting pretty close to really getting ahead with these books. And I think that you will enjoy having those books that, and you know, there's a wonderful synergy in listening to KBOO Radio and listening to good reporting and listening to David K. Johnston and having his book and having these other books so that you can understand what's happening in the United States and the world right now. You can have all four books, and that's a satisfying thought, isn't it, to have your hands on all four books by calling us right this minute at 877-500-5266 and starting or upping your pledge to $15 a month. That's 877-500-KABU. You can also get online at kboo.fm. But you need to act now because this is only going to be available for another, oh, let's see, how many, well, however long it is until 11 a.m.
We call that two and a half hours, most of us do. Anyway.
I'm afraid of doing even 2+2 on the air. It's like, I know I'm going to step on it.
Oh, Teresa, but, your anxiety. Oh.
877-500-KABU, 877-500-5266 is the number to call, and we are ready for your call right now. We have three people standing by the phones, four people standing by the phones, two additional available. We're ready for that ringing to start, and it needs to be you.
877-500-5266, that is the number to call this morning. That is a great little package of books, I gotta say. And the Ari Ravenhoff's book and The Making of Donald Trump I have to say, those two books work really well together. And do please give us that call right now, 877-500-5266. Help us raise the $900 that we need to raise this morning for Positively Revolting. I know that Positively Revolting listeners are familiar with the concepts of mutual aid. I know that we are familiar with the concepts of collective action. I know that we value positive social change and you want to be a part of it. I know that because I talk to you outside the station. You stop me in the co-ops and sometimes as I'm taking a walk in the park. And we have these conversations around town. So please, this is a time to activate yourself right now and support your community radio station so that we can remain strong and fiercely independent. 500-5266, 877-500-5266.
It really has to be you because you're the one who understands how important community radio is. And as I've often said, people come into this town. Michael Perini has mentioned it. Noam Chomsky has mentioned it. They come into Portland and they can tell that there is an active community radio station because people ask informed questions. They ask intelligent questions. And the whole tone is different. We're part of what makes this little part of Cascadia, Cascadia. We're part of what makes this part of Portland, Portland. Broadcasting at 90.7 FM and on the web at kboo.fm. Call us now, 877-500-5266. I just heard one line get taken up. That's not a recording. That's actually our phone ringing. We don't have a computer terminal set up to take your every detail. Nothing like that. We've got a carbonless form, and we're going to write your information down, and if you decide to become a sustaining member, we're going to send the letter out to you. It's very easy. It's a matter of spending 3 minutes on the phone with a real person. Could you pull over right now and actually do that? 877-500-5266 is the number to call. 877-500-KABU. We also have, because it's fall, we have wonderful hoodies for you, a very styly midnight black with a lovely logo on it, the KBOO 90.7 transmitter logo. You can have that for $20 a month. 877-500-5266 is the number to call. Let me give you that number again because you're going to have to remember it while you're pulling over or while you're sneaking over to that unoccupied cubicle so that you can call us while you're at work. 877-500-5266 is the number. That spells KBOO, 877-500-KBOO.
All right.
877-500-5266.
Thank you again, Teresa. We are talking with David K. Johnson this morning. I also want to encourage people to follow along throughout the week on Facebook. You can find Positively Revolting on Facebook. You can also be a part of our Twitterverse. You can find us in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt. Let's go ahead and there's so much to talk about with Trump. You know, he's been...
It's a whole book to explain.
Yes, in fact. And we are only going to scratch the surface this morning, so I really do hope people are availing themselves of that book right now by supporting us. Endorsed by the largest police union. Last night, Trump was responding to the recent protest, the protest yesterday, over the recent killing by police in Charlotte. And Trump sort of blusters on in and says, you know, this sort of violence and riots will never be tolerated in a Trump presidency, never. And the idea of in this time that is so very critical when the roles of police and police violence, especially in communities of color, are being scrutinized. And we are coming together as a nation realizing that this is happening. To have a candidate who is, in fact, endorsed by the largest police union, talking about how these sorts of protests over police killings would not be, you know, classifying them as violence and riots and saying that they would never be tolerated in a Trump presidency, I found that chilling.
Well, you should find that chilling. Let's acknowledge that in Charlotte, on one night, we had totally indefensible acts of violence, but they were by a relative handful of people. There's a terrific photograph the New York Times has of the man who was shot by another protester being shielded from the crowd by a couple of young black men that is also very revealing. But this goes to Donald Trump's utter contempt for the Constitution. The Constitution says the people have a right to to assemble peaceably and petition the government for a redress of grievances. So long as people are being peaceable, they have a right to protest. Donald Trump doesn't believe in that. Donald Trump has said we need stop and frisk, and then he backed up a little bit and said, well, in Chicago. I don't know what makes Chicago unusual other than its temporary high crime rate, which every city has when there's a drug war going on, which is one of the factors in Chicago. But stop and frisk is unconstitutional. We already have a court ruling on this, and furthermore, it doesn't work. What it does is it creates animus and discourages people from cooperating with the police. And in New York, the statistics of the police department itself show that it was driven by what are, in effect, quotas. And there were lots of violations of people's civil rights. Donald Trump simply doesn't believe in a democratic society. Listen to his own words. You don't take my word for it. What did he say at the convention when he accepted the nomination? I alone can solve your problems. That's right. Not how we work in a democracy. He says, I'm going to tell Ford and Nabisco and Carrier and others where they can build their factories. Not only is there no authority for that in the Constitution, but where are the principled conservatives and business leaders saying it's not the position of the president to tell us where to put our money? Nobody told you you couldn't invest in Dubai and have your hats made in Bangladesh. At least that's what my Donald Trump Make America Great Again hat says on it, made in Bangladesh, or your neckties in China or your furniture in Turkey. Trump talks about the presidency as a dictator. And, Ani, I said to people around me, my wife and family and professional friends, when he announced that I knew something about Trump that I wouldn't bring up unless he was elected and he started firing generals. And that is that I was concerned that he would, whether he technically suspended the Constitution, he would, in effect, make himself dictator. Well, then Trump brought it up a few weeks ago. He said that the generals had been reduced to rubble. They were doing a terrible job, which is not true. He denigrated them just as he did the Khan family, whose army captain's son was killed in combat. And he then said he wouldn't have the same generals. Well, we have thousands of years of history that when you have a republic and someone wants to seize power and behave contrary to the republic, the first thing you do is you fire those generals and admirals whose allegiance is to country, and you replace them with the craven officers whose allegiance is to the person. And in the making of Donald Trump, I quote him at great length over many years, so this is no gaffe, as saying that his overriding business principles are get revenge and demand total, unquestioning loyalty from your subordinates. If you work for Donald Trump and he asks you to do a favor and you say, it would be unethical, I can't do that, he then describes you as attacking him. And he says his life's mission is to then destroy your life. And he takes pleasure in everything that goes wrong in your life and does everything he can to make you miserable. Well, if you're going to talk about firing generals, using nuclear weapons in Europe, advancing the number one foreign policy objective of the murderous autocrat Vladimir Putin, which is to weaken or eliminate NATO as he tries to rebuild the old Soviet empire, all of those things point to the fact that if Donald Trump becomes president of the United States, we need to be very worried that it is the end of our freedoms and the end of our republic. And I realize that's very strong language, but I've been studying this man for 28 years. I have tens of thousands of pages of documents about him, and I've read all of his books. And he is someone who describes, in his own words, the president's job in the terms that a dictator would use.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on his calling for the use of nuclear weapons? I find this horrifying.
He said a number of things. First of all, he said, why don't we use nuclear weapons and use them in Europe? Well, every country in Europe is an ally of ours, so that's a rather bizarre comment. He was asked by Hugh Hewitt, the very smart right-wing radio talk show host. Where do you think of Hugh Hewitt? He's a very smart guy. He's a very serious person. He asked back in December, Mr. Trump, what would your priorities be as president for the nuclear triad? And Trump gives this answer that I can only characterize as gibberish. Hewitt then follows up and says, yes, but for the nuclear triad, what are your priorities? And Trump says, oh, nuclear, it's devastating. It's so powerful, it's devastating. And then Hewitt asked the same question of Marco Rubio, who is basically an empty suit. And Rubio schools Donald Trump. He says, well, for those who don't know, the nuclear triad is the capacity of the United States military to deliver nuclear weapons from submarine-based missiles, land-based missiles, or bombers. Now, here's what's really astonishing about that. First of all, that should have been, in my opinion, the lead story in the news the next day from everybody. Donald Trump doesn't know what the nuclear triad is. Mm-hmm. I don't expect ordinary people to know that. But if you want to be president, you've been talking about being president for 33 years, you should know. 31 years. But Trump was asked the same question by Hugh Hewitt 4 months earlier on his radio station, a radio show, and he gave the same gibberish answer about, oh, nuclear, it's so big, it's so devastating. I mean, just stuff you expect to hear from a drunk in a bar.
Right.
I met Hewitt by chance a couple of weeks ago. He was walking out of a TV station as I was walking in, and we stopped and talked about this, and Hewitt said that he was just gobsmacked that Trump had 4 months to prepare for that question to be asked again and didn't. So when I say to people, and I say in my book, The Making of Donald Trump, Donald doesn't know anything, I literally mean that. And I show in the book where he's under oath asked questions that my students could answer at the snap of a finger, and his answers are gibberish. He doesn't know anything. What he knows is that in his own mind, he is genetically superior to the rest of us. And he, of course, should be president because no one else is qualified. They're all stupid. They're all dumb. He knows more than the generals. He knows more than Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton. And if you don't share that view, well, he has a word for you. Loser.
Right. And this is exactly how he's dealt with any press corps criticism, through just basic bullying.
Yeah. If you wanted a real debate with the two candidates, the people who would ask the questions would be Hugh Hewitt and me, maybe Bruce Bartlett as well. You would then get focused, serious questions by people who know how to ask tough questions and stick with them. And I have a list of questions for Trump, 3 of them, and 3 for Hillary Clinton, that it's not going to happen, but were I to get in that position, I would ask. And after the election, I'm going to reveal what they are. And I'm totally confident Trump couldn't answer these simple, basic questions that you should know if you're president. Hillary's questions are much harder, but I'm pretty sure she could answer them because she's had a 40-year career public service and is held in remarkably high esteem. And I didn't know this until I started checking her out. Remarkably high esteem by leaders of other countries, by foreign ministers elsewhere, and by a lot of military people. They hold her incredibly high regard, unlike Trump.
And Trump has gone so far as to suggest that moderators not fact-check him.
Oh, yeah. Well, my goodness. Why would Donald Trump want to be fact-checked?
to not want to be fact-checked to come right out and say, don't do it.
All politicians say things that aren't true, sometimes because they don't word them well or carefully. And they get fact-checked about them. And some of the fact-checking organizations, Paul Krugman has a polite line in his column today about you can quibble with PolitiFact. And I've done that on occasion. I've said, gee, your standard here for something either that I said or somebody else said, I think you didn't fact-check this correctly. But they weren't in the wrong ballpark. They just called a single a triple or a triple a single.
Sure.
In Trump's case, He says things that are so out of touch with reality so often that it's as you pointed out, for late night talk show hosts, this is a gift from heaven. But if he's president, it will plunge us pretty quickly into a constitutional crisis. And then what do we end up with? A small town Indiana radio talk show host in the White House, a misogynist named Mike Pence.
Right. And yeah, where do we go from there? One of the things I wanted to make sure we got to this morning, there's a case that is being brought forth now about possible child rape. That
yeah, I'm telling you, I think that's a planted false story. And let me point out a couple things. It's connected to Roger Stone, who's famous for dirty tricks. Number one, number two, the name of the person turns out to be a variation of the same name of President Obama's former secretary. And so I haven't looked into this, but those two facts alone I find very troubling, because Roger Stone is known to plant false stories. So is Karl Rove. And we should be very, very cautious about that. But there's so much about Trump that has nothing to do with that.
Sure.
It's not necessary to understand this is a man who his entire life has embraced, not just done business with, embraced heavyweight, violent criminals, Russian mobsters, American mafia, con artists, and this drug trafficker. And I think things more interesting about him, if you want to do the sex business, is how Donald Trump got national news about his claims that he was had Madonna and Kim Basinger and Carla Bruni pounding on his bedroom door, because, of course, every woman has to have Donald Trump. He's the great Don Juan of our time. Two of them had never met him, and Carla Bruni, who calls him the king of sleaze, says he's insane and nothing ever happened. You know, they had a phone conversation, and they apparently talked briefly at a charity fashion show. And yet, when he was offered the opportunity years later, when Carla Bruni became First Lady of France, to correct the record on the Howard Stern show, instead, he engaged in a game to perpetuate this myth. And he got national news coverage. NBC News covered Donald Trump's claims about this. We're not talking about some 13-year-old boy saying, oh, guess what Sally and I did in the back row at the theater Saturday night. We're talking about a man, middle-aged and now older, who tells these fantastic made-up tales of his prowess and talks about his genitalia. And this is someone who we would even consider for mayor of a small town, much less president of the United States. And by the way, that's not an endorsement of Hillary Clinton. She's got lots of flaws. No question about that. I wish we had better candidates being put up by a system that isn't going to put up better candidates until we reform campaign finance laws.
And I think that really gets to a whole nother crux of the issue, for sure. I wish we had another hour and a half or so that we could start unpacking that. Unfortunately, we don't, and our time is drawing to a close. So I just want to maybe ask you one last question about Trump's the repeated request that he give forth his tax forms, that he release his tax history, and his absolute denial and refusal to do so.
We're never going to see Donald Trump's tax return. In the making of Donald Trump, first of all, I tell about how he committed sales tax fraud. And there's no question he committed sales tax fraud. Then I tell about his maybe not technically fraudulent, but morally fraudulent property tax actions in a number of cases where he claims something's worth $250 million, but for tax purposes, $10 million. More than $50 million, but for tax purposes, $1.3 million. And then I go through his tax returns. The last year that we know for a fact that Donald Trump paid income taxes was 1977. We know for a fact he did not pay income taxes in 78, 79, 84, 92, and 94. We know for a fact that in the last 3 years, he reported an income on the front page of his tax return, the last line on your tax return on the front page, of less than $500,000. And we know that in 1984, this is a story that I dug up this year from the public record and is in the making of Donald Trump, that when his own longtime tax guy, a lawyer and accountant named Jack Mitnick, was testifying under oath, he was shown Donald Trump's tax return and he said, "That's my signature, but I didn't prepare that tax return." That is a very strong indication of fraud. And if we had Trump's tax returns like we do Hillary Clinton's, we would learn two things. One, he's paid little or no tax in the last 38 years. Secondly, that there are probably all sorts of fraudulent numbers in his returns. Keep in mind that the IRS is, as a practical matter, half the size it was in terms of its law enforcement capacity compared to 15 years ago, and that while wage earners continue to be fully taxed, people with complex tax returns, like Trump's, his son says, 1,200-page tax return, the Congress, the Republican Congress, has been ordering the firing and removal of the top-level auditors who know how to find this stuff and has been putting in place rules that limit audits of corporations and wealthy people so that they're getting away with all sorts of murder. The corporate tax auditors, the top ones, bring in on average over $19 million a year. They cost $150,000 for their salary, and Congress has been decimating their ranks. So, and we make almost no effort to enforce the tax law at the top. There will be about 1,500 or 1,600 recommendations for tax crime prosecutions this year. There'll be about 1,200 prosecutions, and most of those, almost all of them, will be either people in the drug business or politicians who took bribes. There is no serious effort by the government of the United States to criminally enforce the tax laws. But so Trump can operate pretty freely about this. He's being right now he's named as a material witness in a $250 million tax fraud in a lawsuit in Manhattan. He denies he did anything improper, and that tax fraud is intimately connected with the oligarchs around Vladimir Putin.
David K. Johnston, you thank you so much for joining us. Your recent book, The Making of Donald Trump, thank you very much for writing that and for doing the investigative reporting work you do. It's so very important. You have been a member of KABU in the past. Can you talk about why you support community radio?
Sure. And thank you, Ani, for having me on.
Absolutely.
Community radio isn't beholden to anybody, and you get what you pay for. You know, I'm the chairman of the board of a tiny nonprofit news organization called the Investigative Post in Buffalo. We have four reporters. The story that's in the news today of all the indictments of people around Andrew Cuomo for billions of dollars of bid rigging, that's the work of the Investigative Post. But if we don't have individuals supporting us, because like KABU, we're a nonprofit and we don't take any advertising revenue, and we disclose all our donors and give $1,000 or more, this would never have happened. These crimes would have gone on. In fact, Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney in Manhattan, has said they got the story from us, and his original subpoenas were cut and paste, right, almost perfectly cut and paste right out of the articles. Places like KABU, and there are many community radio stations around the country, don't have to be beholden to anybody. They're not even in the position of NPR and PBS shows. PBS, when they interviewed me, cut out every reference to Donald Trump and criminals. NPR and PBS have to be worried about Congress coming after them and cutting their funding. Community radio is only accountable to the people who listen, and if they don't support it, they're going to lose that voice, and you're not going to have the benefit of that diversity in voices, and you're not going to have the benefit of organizations that aren't going to be suppressed by anything except a failure of people to donate to support it.
Thank you so much for joining us again, David K. Johnston.
Thank you
for
Ani.
Your work. Take care. And Teresa. Hey, Teresa.
I am here.
877-500-5266. That's the number to call to support KABU for your $75 contribution. You can get a copy of David K. Johnston's book, The Making of Donald Trump. What do you have to say, Teresa?
Well, I'll say that we've got 3 minutes to raise the remaining $825. That's exactly the amount of time that you need to be on the phone with us. So please call right now. This is your last chance to pledge Positively Revolting during this membership drive, and yes, we will give you a copy of The Making of Donald Trump by David K. Johnston. You can do that for a $6.25 monthly contribution, but I have more to offer you as well. Before I do, though, I want to say fact-checking. That came up, and fact-checking has made David K. Johnston famous. Fact-checking is Ani's middle name. That's Ani Fact-checking Raven Haynes, and she does the work before she ever does the interview. That's why you listen, I think. 877-500-5266. Now, for $15 a month, that's a $180 sustaining pledge, we can give you the KABU's Fight the Fascist Power Pack. Jinka just put this together. It has the book that I just mentioned, The Making of Donald Trump by David K. Johnston. It also has Limousine Liberal, How an Incendiary Image United the Right and Fractured America by Steve Frazier. Lies Incorporated by Ari Robin Hoft. Media Matters for America, presenting a revelatory history of the industry that creates and disseminates lies in the service of political agendas. Necessary Trouble, America's in Revolt by Sarah Jaffe, definitive book on the movements that are poised to permanently remake politics. I would love to have this library myself. You can have all four books by calling us right now, this very second, 877-500-5266. 2.5 minutes left for you to do this. 877-500-KABU, 877-500-5266 is the number to call.
And perhaps a little slower for people that aren't practiced with the speed dialing.
877-500-5266. 5-2-6-6
You are such an extremist. Well, you know, it's so important to hear from you right now. Dear listeners, this is your moment. Come on in. Support Positively Revolting in the morning. Support your access to independent media. Support KABU Community Radio. You know, social change is not a spectator sport. It is not something you can just sort of sit back and say, oh yeah, you know, those other folks over there, they're going to make the world a better place. I'm busy. No, that is not what you say if you actually want to make things better. You actually have to get involved. And right now we're asking you to get involved to support community radio however you can afford to support it. You know, can you do a monthly donation? Do you got 10 bucks in your wallet right now? Go ahead and take a leap of faith. Go ahead and pledge that $10 to KABU in a sustaining way so that you know $10 every month comes out of your checking account and supports your entire community. For $15 a month, you can get that little library of books for the Fighting the Fascists. I love that package deal. $15 a month, it can be yours. Do it right now. 877-500-5266. Thank you for people that have called this morning. Keep those phones ringing. We are out of time. 877-500-5266. Keep those phones ringing. We want to reach that $900 goal. We want to reach our overall goal of $120,000. 877-500-5266.
The making of Donald Trump can be yours, along with Libazine Liberal, Lies Incorporated, and Necessary Trouble, a library of four books on very topical matters. And I think that you will be glad to have it. I think that you will be well educated by it. 877-500-5266. Still have a line open. 877-500-KABU. That's you right now. 877-500-5266.
Good morning. It's 8:59, and this is KBOO Portland. Coming up, we have a special program, The Rise of the Fascist Right, featuring Indymedia and Occupy Wall Street activist and journalist Arun Gupta, and historian Steve Fraser, author of The Limousine Liberal, How an Incendiary Image United the Right and Fractured America.
KABU would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Lair Hill Bistro, located at 2823 Southwest 1st Avenue, a family-owned eatery serving home-cooked food just outside downtown Portland. Lunch was provided by Fatou's Kitchen, a restaurant located on 3601 Northeast MLK, serving Afro-Caribbean, Afro-Latin, African food, and also soul food. Dinner was provided by Namaste Indian Cuisine, whose locally owned and operated restaurants, including the location at 1403 Northeast Widler Street, offers a buffet menu with vegetarian and gluten-free options.